Hello, everyone, and welcome to Natural Geekery. This is a podcast where we talk about role-playing games, tabletop role-playing games, how they've impacted our lives, the people that play them, the people that make them, the people that just enjoy them, the troops of people that get together and enjoy this alchemy and magic that these games can bring to our lives. This show is all about that, and we interview individuals and talk to them about how games have impacted them, how these particular types of games have impacted them. And we kick back and we get real geekified, I guess. Okay, so I hope everyone's having a good night, and I'm really looking forward to sharing this interview with you. This is part two of our series of interviews with a vampire. I think that's original. I think it's a pretty good title for this. These are interviews with the cast of Darkness Over New Orleans, which is a Vampire the Masquerade game on Twitch that airs every Thursday night, and it is run by my buddy Dylan on his stream on Twitch, Roll for Dylan. Those links will be down in the show notes. I highly recommend you check it out. I will be interviewing Alec, also known as Commune DM on the social media sphere verse world. His links will be down in the show notes as well. And I think you're going to want to check him out after you hear this interview. I want to be clear. I thoroughly enjoy every opportunity I have to interview people, to talk about their stories, how these games have impacted their lives. And I just want to say that. But I also have to say that I think this interview is very powerful. I think there is a lot of really good information here for experienced game masters and players, as well as beginners, mainly for beginners. And so I think you're really going to enjoy this interview. I'll let you decide. I don't want to talk it up too much. But also, before we start, I do want to warn the listener that we do get into subjects that some listeners may find troubling. We do talk about mental health. We talk about anger issues, family issues, and addiction. And how also we kind of get into a conversation about handling character emotions around the table. I think that it's just, there's a lot of really good information here, but if you don't want to listen to something like that, or it's completely understandable, and maybe check in on the next episode, but I do want to give that heads up to anyone just before we get into things. And I want to praise Alec, for his openness and his honesty on these subjects, and how open he was and communicative about how they impacted and influenced and some of his choices with his role playing. We also cover some very important information about streaming on Twitch if you're thinking about running a game. It was inspirational. It was amazing. And I'm just very happy that Alec came on and gave us that information. So I'm going to cut right to the chase on this one. Not much more. The only announcement I have is that also we have our Twitch game, Wild is Plus, where we sit around and continue some of our game world that we started in season two. That will be on Twitch on when this episode airs, it'll be that evening. April the 26th. And don't even know what day it is. April 26th, 8 o'clock. And then we are every other week. We are going to launch episode one tonight. So we're very excited about that. And more to come on that. I'm going to leave another announcement for the outro at the end of the interview. But I'm going to cut right into it. This is a long interview. We're already going to go over on time. So I think you'll enjoy it though. So yeah, sit back, enjoy this interview, and I will talk to you in a little bit. All right, everyone. Hello and welcome back to our continuing interviews with the cast of Darkness Over New Orleans. And tonight I am joined by Alec. Hello, Alec. Welcome.
Hello. Hello. Thank you for having me. This is very fun. This is very exciting. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's going to be a good time. And I love interviewing people that are into the same things I am, and we usually have a good time with it. So we'll just jump right into it. Let's first of all, tell everybody about yourself for folks that might be listening to the podcast that don't normally perhaps watch the Twitch stream. Like, tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you live, like, what do you do on the side?
Absolutely.
Anything you're willing and comfortable to share.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, my name is Alec. I also go by Commune or CommuneDM on internet spaces. My pronouns are he, him. I am a Midwestern boy. I am from the lovely, right now, currently frigid state of Wisconsin. I'm a project manager for a media company for my full-time job. But other than that, I do a lot of stuff in the TTRPG space. I host my own channel where we do, I run a fifth edition homebrew campaign in my homebrew setting, as well as have other programs on. We actually just did our first monthly Call of Cthulhu anthology series run on Saturday. So yeah, I do a lot of stuff, a lot of fun stuff in the community, and play with a lot of amazing people. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. How long have you been? Oh, let's stop. Let's go back. The question I always ask first, after we get the introduction out of the way, tell us your origin story. How did you start on this role playing journey? What got you into it? Take us back.
I mean, I have been collaboratively storytelling with family, friends, and peers since I was a kid. Okay. So I think that was a very early inception for that, but I didn't really get started into like tabletop role playing and that sort of venue of storytelling until about 2014, 2015.
Okay.
Like most people in the tabletop boom, I saw a very little known game called Critical Role, and I was like, well, that's pretty rad. I think me and my friends could do that. And then I was the friend that was like, I'll run it. I'll make something up. We'll go. And then that campaign blew up in about 2 months because I didn't know what I was doing, but it came from there. So a lot of my love for role-playing and storytelling started when I was a kid. Like I would write comics with my friends and we would tell stories, and and then that evolved once the tabletop aspect came up about a decade ago. God, 9 years ago. Holy shit.
Don't think about it. Trust me. Don't think about it. Don't think
about it. Okay. Yeah. It's out of my brain. But that's pretty much it. Trust me.
Yeah. Don't think too hard about it. That's really cool. So were you ever in, theater? Did you do any theater or any sort
No. My mom always used to tell me that I should do stand up as an adult, but I don't know about that. I'm far too anxious and humor is a mask, so I don't want to be masked for that long. But I think the only the only realm of theater acting I've had in my life before like tabletop stuff, I my mom took me and my younger brother to audition for a Pop-Tarts commercial, and we didn't get it. So
so
it wasn't in the cards then.
But it's always interesting to me, like, folks are either into theater or they're into comic books or they're into movies. Were you big into movies? Were you big into fantasy action movies? Or
I think it was more video games for me.
My
brother and I would play like a lot of Final Fantasy or even game series like Devil May Cry or Ninja Gaiden, where action was at the forefront, but there was also, if you really enjoyed those games, like you dive into the storytelling elements of it and like the interpersonal relationships. And those are always things we super enjoyed. And those are things we riffed off of each other with. So video games were huge, and I fell in love with movies a lot more as a teenager, young adult, but I think like that love for storytelling really started with video games.
Yeah. Okay.
And comics. Like I think I got my first comic I got was a Spider-Man comic, my cousin Derek's basement.
Okay.
I was viciously yelled at for stealing it, which rightfully so, I stole it. But yeah, I fell in love with it, and I think it was comics and video games that really was like, oh wow, like I'm enjoying a story right now. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really cool. And then, so then you, stumbled on a Critical Role? Was that a friend pointed you that way, or did you just happen to like find it one Thursday night? Or?
I think I had just, you know, those YouTube rabbit holes that you kind of fall into, or it's like,
right.
I, for a long time, have just loved, if I'm a fan of something, I'll just want to consume anything and everything about it. So I think at that point it was some sort of like, I was still getting into like the Dark Souls games. So I was like, maybe if I understand the lore of this, I'll be less frustrated with these very difficult games. But then I saw on the YouTube trending tab or whatnot, like a live, oh, Dungeons and Dragons. I've absolutely heard of this before. Let's see what this is. And I was enraptured by it.
Nice.
They were pretty deep into campaign one, I think, when I started, and I was like, whoa, this is great. And then I recognized the voices. I was like, okay. Yeah, I know who these people, at least I've heard them before. And that all ties back to the love of video games, where I'm like, I've heard monologues that have affected me from this person. And now I get to watch them live, like tell their own stories. Right. So
yeah.
And I think I just like, I watched a couple episodes, and then I went to my friends and I was like, yeah, let's try that. And they're like, we're nerdy. Let's do it. Can I swear? I didn't know. I didn't ask. Can I swear? Is that okay?
Oh yeah. That's
okay.
Fine. It's fine. I tend to be a family friendly podcast, but it's okay. You can,
okay.
I'll cut loose every now and then.
I'll be diligent. but yeah. And
wow,
like I said before, we got started and a couple campaigns blew up and then,
and then
we just kept going. Yeah.
So the, so walk us through the first game. Like, so you bought the books, right? And you're like,
I did not buy the books.
Just went with the SRD or?
I found PDFs online. And I had, what I was looking at was that initial PDF that I was looking at, which I think was like the starter set, which was already out. And then what I wanted to do, I wanted that grandiose. I wanted that really enriching storytelling without putting in the work. You know what I mean? Because you're like, we're diving into the fantasy. We're just going in and we're doing it and it'll be amazing from the jump. It's not, spoiler alert. Like, it's not going to be that way. Well, excuse me. But the concept was something like a mid-fantasy Suicide Squad where all of these adventurers are on, you know, high max prisons and they're sent to do the kingdom's dirty work.
Okay.
And then I didn't understand game balance because I had one PDF and I was watching to like balance it. So
absolutely. Right. Yeah.
And then my BBEG was killed in session 10.
Okay.
Via a wish spell because I fell into the trap of giving them a deck of many things.
Oh.
And they pulled the wish card and got three wishes. And I was giving this, you know, this evil speech. And one of my players was like, I'll blow her head up. I wish her head exploded. And I was like, yikes! Okay. Because I didn't, and my creative muscle wasn't flexed. So I couldn't be like, okay. Verbiage is super important with the wish spell, right? So her head explodes. Okay, are her ideas far more vast and dangerous than they were before? Like,
right.
But I was just like, oh no, her head goes pop. Yeah, cool. So then I went now time travel has to be involved and how do we backtrack it? And it was a nightmare. My friends were like, Alec, this isn't fun. And I'm like, yeah, no, I agree.
Oh no. Yeah, right. Yeah, we have a rule. I've been in place for a while and I've heard it on the internet that, you know, if you're not, the only way you win D&D is by having fun. If you're not having fun,
absolutely,
you haven't won D&D. And there's been many game sessions when we walk out and we're like, yeah, I think we won D&D. I think we won.
Yeah.
That's cool.
A lot of experience.
Yeah. And I think the first few games are always, and I don't get me wrong, I'm not laughing at you over that.
It's
laughing.
Funny.
Well, I'm laughing at my own shared experience because I can still remember my first games where it's just you're fumbling in the dark. Like, especially if you're all beginners to it and you're like, hey, I saw this cool show called Critical Role and I've got this PDF. Let's spend an evening and get some chips and like play this game. I don't know what I'm doing and neither do you. And there is kind of a magic in all that, right?
Even if the game isn't what I expect it to be now, Yeah. There was still something, there was lightning in a bottle sitting on the floor of my friend's living room, opening soda and just riffing off of each other like we would normally on a weekend, but just in this new paradigm, right?
And with a new structure, a slightly new structure of story and rules and dice.
And even though the first foray into it wasn't great, there was the desire to continue.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, let's maybe when we learn more, we can try again. And we did.
Yeah.
And there were adventures that we did have that were a lot of fun. And like my first campaign to completion, which is, I think, a year and a half long campaign, was with those group of people. So,
right.
You know, it's there that you learn and you grow and it is a muscle to flex.
Yeah, absolutely. So, how long between the first game and that year and a half long campaign?
Oh, about 3 years.
Yeah.
About three years. 'Cause we had done like over that time is when I found I really loved like one shots or few shot adventures.
Yeah.
Telling like a really condensed narrative where plot is the focus.
Mm-hmm.
It is super like engaging for my brain. like I'm in it. We can just kind of go and then we'll reach a conclusion. But yeah, about 3 years, and we had a campaign that was a complete campaign, but it was Curse of Strahd and I really wasn't enjoying it. It was a module that I didn't really fall in love with. Mm-hmm. But then after that, it was like, okay, I've been building a homebrew world. I have all of this stuff that I want to dive into, and we did. We went from start to finish and really, really fleshed that world out together in a beautiful way. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so cool. That is a special experience when you get a chance to do that for sure. I've had that as well. And it's super great. Do you still have the world? Are you still playing in the world?
I am currently running a streamed campaign in that setting. Okay. As of right now. Yeah.
Nice. So what is your Twitch stream name? We'll make sure to
it's CommuneDM. Yeah. Twitch.tv /CommuneDM.
Yep. Right on. Cool. Yep. So were you, as the person that got the friends together and volunteered to run the game, did you get sort of branded as the go-to GM permanently? Yeah.
Like, absolutely.
Always a GM, like always a bridesmaid, never a bride, like always a GM, never a player.
Absolutely. I think it wasn't until probably 2018, 2019 before I was a player in that group. Yeah. So it was a good like 5 years where I was running games, and like there were, as our friend group kind of expanded, there were different people that came in that had been like playing tabletop games. So the first campaign that I was a player in was actually a Fate Core game. But I loved it. It was incredible. Going from fifth edition to Fate Core is really different because
let's talk about it.
The dice feel super secondary to the story you're telling. And it is obviously well designed that way. And I think with the table we had, like we had a bunch of English majors. We had a friend who's in the midst of writing his own fantasy novel and a bunch of people who just love telling stories and the plot was, we were in 1890s London, and it was a mix of like Sherlock and A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen where we would investigate crimes, and then about halfway through this adventure it began to become supernatural and strange. So it was really fun, but the difference in mechanics between fifth edition, which is like, okay, we want to focus on the mechanical aspects, when it's like, hey, we could play a full game of Fate and like roll dice twice, you know, and just go for it and just riff, you know? So, yeah.
So did you find that difficult or easier? If you had your choice, which would you prefer?
I think now I enjoy the mechanical aspects a lot more now that I've played different TTRPGs.
Yeah.
I really love diving into mechanical minutiae. I'm still not great at it. I want to get a lot better, but it's something that I'm finding myself more comfortable with as I continue. But then like when we started, I was in love with the idea of just getting to play and like, and just getting to go and kind of riff off of my friends and create a character that was different to anything I had even played as like an NPC.
Sure. Yeah. Fate is very, that's a big jump. I would consider that.
Yeah.
It's like a big jump, but just a very different jump, right? Like it's a different paradigm of how to run a game. Mm-hmm. And so I could see where it could be startling or difficult or a little like some people, I think with D&D, you have everything in front of you. Like if you're playing a ranger, you know that at third level you get this and fourth level you get this and fifth, like there is a progression. It's all there for you.
Yep.
And in Fate, it's very much, well, tell me what your character, who's your character?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about them. What do they do? What are they good at? And there's no guideposts for further along the way.
Yeah. It's just, kind of you really describe what your evolution is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you work with like your storyteller and your peers, and you really kind of work to find a way to make that growth impactful.
Right.
And that was a thing that was really fun for me to experience as a player, because it's something that I then incorporate into my games that I run. Like, I think that there's a way to create that emotional depth and compassionate intermingling between mm-hmm. like yourself as a storyteller and the players that are at your table.
Yeah.
And I think I learned a lot of that from Fate, like in retrospect. Yeah, absolutely.
I could totally see that. I came across Fate much late in my game career, and I was like, where have you been? Where have you been? I've mm-hmm. been looking for you for so long.
I found you, sweet girl.
So what other game systems have you played in? Sounds like you played Fate. You've done some Cthulhu.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've played D&D 5e. I've played Call of Cthulhu. I've played Fate. I have played Vampire, which obviously mm-hmm. we're here talking about, right. Witcher RPG. Pathfinder second edition.
Right on.
The ones that are really, God, there are more.
Right. Somewhere.
There are some other ones. Like Honey Heist, some like fun.
Oh yeah, yeah, fun little
TTRPGs. Like yeah.
Beer and pretzel kind of games.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So what have you found interesting? Now, had you played the Vampire game system before you came on? Okay, so you're okay, all right.
Dylan was like, "Hey, you want to play a game of Vampire?" I was like, "I never have," and they were like, "Cool, a couple of the other players haven't either, and it's an adventure we'll dive into together." And it's been an experience. Yeah.
So what do you like about it so far? What have you found that really? What do you like and don't like? Like what's?
I love how challenging it is. Okay. It is the most challenging experience I've had as a role player, because it is a system that is set within a real world, right? Like Louisiana, New Orleans is a real place,
right?
And the problems that Kindred are often grappling with affect human lives. And I am playing a character who just found out for our last session that like there are people, human beings who like consensually feed Kindred. And I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, how do I then grapple with 3 years of isolation and suffering that is ultimately self-imposed? So it's like, there's a lot of, it's obviously fantastical given the system, but it is so much to contend with as a player, at least for me personally. Right. And it's been my favorite and least favorite thing, I think. Cause like, it's a way to test your abilities, but also it is a challenge. It's a challenging thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about your character a little bit. Like, so who's your character? Give us a little bit of backstory, whatever you're willing to
absolutely
reveal. If
I play Kiernan Blake, who is a Bruja Kindred. He is 3 years out from his embrace. He was an art student in college, and he suffered an accident via a drunk driver that completely destroyed his arms. and he could not do what he loved. He could not pursue his degree with much success. So the last couple of years of college, he really fell down this dark hole of kind of loathing, anger, and hedonism.
Okay.
And he met who would be his sire. And he makes a recovery from his physical therapy. And that night he is turned and left alone.
Oh, okay. Right.
Brouhaha. And so, yep. And so he kind of spends 3 years grappling with, wow, I don't want to be a monster. I don't want to hurt people. But then at the same time, he starves his beast. So he frenzies and he does ultimately hurt people. And then he meets his coterie. Yeah, he's a big ball of wanting to maintain humanity whilst being the most monstrous version of himself.
Right. Nice. And I'm sure Dylan was like, ah, nom, 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 nom.
Oh, yeah. You're like, whoa, you're giving me this?
This is for me?
What is it, my birthday?
Well, but that's also, though, you've been a GM. And I think that's one of the things that, like, you have the experience of a GM. You've been on that side of the table. Mm-hmm. And you've worked with players with their own backstory. So when you go to create a backstory, you can be like, oh, no, this is going to be really tasty for this guy.
Oh, here, absolutely.
Let me serve you up a meal.
Yeah, when I play, I want to, I love giving my storytellers or my DMs or my GMs lines to read between.
Yes, right.
Yeah, gaps same. To fill. Mm-hmm. Because it's something I love getting as a storyteller. In the game that I'm running now, one of my players who's played by the phenomenal Blue Button gave me they're phenomenal, they're incredible. I love them dearly. They gave me a full amnesiac, and they're like, trust you to build, and
that's the word, trust. That's the word.
Yeah. And it's, and that's an utter responsibility. Mm-hmm. I want to do that when I bring players or bring characters to other people's tables.
Right. That is, oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. And I love it that there's that. I think every person that plays should try to GM.
Yeah, I agree.
Because there are a lot of times there's people that just play. They just want to play. They don't want to try. But I think at some point everybody should try it at least once.
I agree.
To know, not in a hazing way.
No,
but it allows you to then understand what's happening on the other side of the table, and that you begin to understand that it's kind of math, right? Like, it's an equation. Oh, I care a lot about my players because I really care that they like what I'm putting out there. And then as a player, you turn around and you're like, oh, I really take that
empathy into your ability to play. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it creates and helps that bond back.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I went on a riff there, but
it's incredibly poignant. And just to piggyback, like, I think that having longtime players move into the storytelling seat, like, it breaks that stigma that a DM isn't a player. And I think that you're able to really see that you pick up and you revel in everybody else's moments in the same way that you did before as a player.
Right.
The investment just feels so much bigger, if that makes sense. Like, you are invested in not only your own story, but you're invested in 3 to 5 other stories, and you want to see them all come to fruition.
Yeah. And the world itself. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
If it's a homebrew, then it's definitely, there's a lot of love and caring about, like, these NPCs you make that, like,
Yeah.
I really want to see this guy succeed, but it's going to be up to the player characters. So no, what have I done? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So either from a game you've ran or your current stream, or even from Darkness Over New Orleans, like, let's talk favorite moments, like moments that either give you goosebumps or moments that you think about for days after. Like, even from years ago, you can think back and, like, oh, I remember this one time that, like, what do you got? You got anything?
The beautiful and the beautiful and the challenging thing about the last 3 years, right? So like height of pandemic times is when I really started playing D&D online with people. There were a lot of moments that really stick out. And going to that first campaign, the first full campaign I ran in my world of Aosha, it was a 3-man band. We had a Goliath barbarian pugilist. We had a human paladin, and we had a dragonborn wizard named Gunther Gizzard, the greatest kid lizard wizard.
Oh my God.
Lester Lawson was the paladin, and Garak Stonefist was the pugilist. The whole last session was a fight against Tiamat.
Oh, wow.
And watching a year and a half of story culminate into this fight that had so many stakes, because I play very fast and loose with like Forgotten Realms lore. And at this point, they did not really pursue the Cult of Dragons storyline. So by the time it was happening, like we were in it, like Tiamat was risen and she had consumed Mystra, the goddess of magic. She was not only Tiamat, but she had full access to the weave.
Oh boy.
Spells were at her disposal. And just watching, there was a moment where they could kill her, they could kill Tiamat, or they could bind her to Avernus. They could disrupt the weave, break it, or risk corrupting it in Avernus. And they're like, okay, we kill her. And I'm like, the ramifications that had alone on the next campaign I ran in that world, huge.
Yeah.
It completely shifted the world. And you think about the actions that three individuals have, incredible. So from that first campaign, there's that. And then I really online playing D&D got my start with the Welcome, and a phenomenal collaborative TTRPG channel that was very kind and gave me every opportunity that I've received thus far. And one of the first games I played with them was like a battle royale one shot where I made this really edgy blood hunter, because naturally you make really edgy blood hunters,
right? Yeah, I think it's in the contract.
Well, you're legally obligated. If you don't, you can't play the blood hunter. But at the end of it, this is the first game. I think this was the first couple of games I had played with Josh, the governor, who is one of my best friends, phenomenal GM, incredible player, one of the best dudes I know. Nice. And that was the first game I played with Blue Boo Button. And we were walking into the final fight, which was me against Button, and my character got to do this like reveal of his tragic backstory. And the way that like the two of us, Button and I, played off of each other, I was like, this is somebody I want at my table all of the time.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
And there's that immediate like, oh shit, this person has had an effect on me.
Yes.
Yeah. We've talked about that a lot. So like, that's a huge one. Awesome. That's like a core TTRPG memory. And then,
oh heck yeah, that's amazing.
In the last stream campaign I ran, there was a, having my core group of adventurers and every guest that's ever appeared on it show up and fight Lolth.
Oh, wow.
We set it up where it was a split combat, the main party with Lolth, and then the guests were the vanguard. They were taking on the ad waves and other enemies. And it was beautiful. And obviously there's a lot of stuff already with the new campaign, but like we just did our 10th session yesterday and we're still getting into it. Darkness Over Borderlands. Sure. There's a lot. I'm talking so much. I'm so sorry.
No, that's the point. You're doing it. What? You're doing it right.
There's a reveal for Ambrose. When Thorn became Ambrose, that was incredibly poignant. And I think it was so cool to see on the outside as somebody who like has seen that character through Robin's content.
Right.
See him revealed in that way, I was like, oh, this is absolutely rad. But then to think of the ramifications of that in game, you're like, uh-oh. Oh no. Oh no.
Oh no.
I think that's, yeah, that's a huge one from Darkness Over New Orleans, where I'm like, I think about that one a lot. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. That's
Yeah.
awesome. It's, yeah, talking about the what you had with buttons there,
Yeah.
that's the magic. That's the deep magic there, right? Like that's when I
Yeah,
talk about
absolutely.
RPG magic, it's that coming together with a troop of people, sometimes one at a time, right? But coming together with this troop of people that it's just it's a knowing and it's shared by everyone there that yeah, it's a very special thing.
Well, and that was what I felt immediately upon, like, both the first pre-check call for Darkness Over New Orleans, but the first campaign, the first session of this newer campaign that I'm running, like that lightning in a bottle that you never think you're gonna catch. Like you talk to these people individually and you kind of get a feel for their character, and then you put them all together in a room, and then you see the magnetism, you see that energy just beginning to boil over, and you're like, oh, this is, oh my God, I feel like I just had 18 cups of coffee. Like I'm so hyped up. Yeah. So absolutely. And I've
Oh,
gained,
so good.
I've garnered that feeling from both of those games. And I think it's incredible, especially since this is my first time playing Vampire and it's been so impactful.
Well, and so I'm going to jump around a little bit on the question.
Please.
Speaking
Absolutely.
of impactful, this is probably one of my favorite questions to ask, but have you ever had a character surprise you or teach you something about yourself as far as impactful? Like what you make the character and the character goes on about their story, and then sometime halfway through the character's story, you suddenly have this moment of like, oh, wait a minute, this character, I'm learning something about myself by playing this character.
Yeah, honestly, Kiernan's a big one. Kiernan's a really big one, and I think that I grappled a lot in my youth with my relationship with anger. And if that's too deep, you cut me off now. We don't go any
Oh,
further.
no, it's up to you. However comfortable you feel talking
I'm
about it.
comfy.
All
I
right,
just
let's
want,
get
you know,
comfy
your
then.
boundaries also matter. And I just wanted to check
I
in.
appreciate that, but no,
Of course.
I understand that. So yeah, go ahead. It's
Yeah,
fine.
absolutely had a really contentious relationship with anger. I think it was very present in the home that I grew up in, and like my father, alcoholic, who very, very quick trigger, and my mother was an addict, now is in, in recovery, and she's doing well. And but
Good, good.
I never wanted to be angry, because the one thing my mom would say is, you sound just like your dad.
Oof,
And that
oof,
was
oof.
horrific. Like, that's a horrific thing to hear,
Right.
especially when you're able to cognize like what that means to the people around you. So I don't often raise my voice. I don't often get loud. I don't often, and me as a human being, like I'm 6 foot 6 and I'm quite the large man. So I understand how intimidating that is off the bat. So,
Right on. Yeah,
you know,
6 foot 8 here. So
holy shit, what? Jesus Christ, I've
Nobody
never,
knows because
whoa. The funniest thing was, I was
I
like,
hide it
you're
well.
like what, 5'8"? And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Sure.
But I
But
get what
like,
you're saying about
yeah.
the physical presence and people immediately like they don't even know you and they step away from you. Like
Absolutely. Well, and like when I was in college, I was in a it was a college town, very small. I'd walk past, because you'd walk past all the bars to get to like the university hall or like the library. And women, non-binary people, other men would just cross the street, and like I would never take offense to that, because you, of course, like of course that is an intimidating figure to see walking down the street. But I don't know about you, but I over the course of my adulthood have like pitched my voice up and like really not kept a lower register, because I don't want to be intimidating and I don't want people to feel uncomfortable. But Kiernan is a guy that is still very much grappling with that anger. And that is the thing that I have struggled the most with that character, is feeling like, oh shit, I'm bad. No. the character is still working, but clocking that I've made leagues of growth. I am far more emotionally mature, mentally mature, and past that anger than that character is.
How awesome to have that as almost like a mirror and a checkpoint of.
I want to share this because I sent this to Dylan too. I made a Who is Kiernan doc because it was something that I was really struggling with.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, and I said, you know, remember that you are not Kiernan. You have come to terms with and now understand your anger and its history. Mm-hmm. Kiernan may look like you, he may sound like you, but Alec has grown where Kiernan is still growing. To focus on the character and to stay in his mindset, anchor to his experiences and his goals, focus on the content above, which there I wrote a myriad of things.
Yeah.
And it was like, those experiences are not yours and very extremely from Alec's life. And it is okay to feel emotions. This game is a heavy one, but learn the difference between Kiernan's emotions and Alec's emotions. And right. I think that was
absolutely,
that was a huge thing that I, and there are still moments where I still have to disconnect it. And I think that's okay. Mm-hmm. Like there are moments where I doubt and I'm like, oh God, like, am I doing okay? Like, is this good for me? Am I good for them? You know, but like, ultimately, I think it's a far more impactful and important experience than I can even recognize at this point.
Right. Yeah. I would probably agree with that. And that, the other thing though, is that you have such a, supportive troop.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's one of the things about the World of Darkness games. If they are done well, you end up with a troop of people that really outside of game, end up caring a lot more for each other. This is a risky statement, but there's almost a certain level of connection that happens in a World of Darkness game amongst the troop.
Yeah.
Than you would say happens in your casual D&D game, because you're delving into some deeper things, let alone some of the horror sides that can, but you're digging into a character's nature, which is ultimately little snippets of yourself. And as long as you have a supportive group of people, you can, it creates a very tight unit.
And the core of that, and it's something that I've come to grapple with and with an incredible support system that I do have, being like, you need to make sure that you are communicating those things.
Yeah.
Like if those are things that you're struggling with, like you need to make sure that you are talking to that troop. And
yes.
You know, being able and it's work, right? Like World of Darkness is a World of Darkness, and there's a lot that is touched on and a lot that is alluded to or just plainly stated that it is and can be a lot to contend with. And I think that you're absolutely right, especially in darker games like this, or even something like Call of Cthulhu, where sanity and mental health are so tied to the mechanical and storytelling base of that game.
Right.
You have to be able to check in and be like, hey, like, is everybody doing okay? Like, how are you feeling? Right, like, how, you know, the game I played on Saturday, somebody forgot their most prized human relationship and another one completely lost the use of their right arm, like in an instant. So it's like, how do you, okay, we're going to take a break. Hi, how's everybody doing? Is everybody doing okay?
Yeah. Everybody good? Everybody good
about this? Yeah, right. You know, but yeah, like that, those bonds and those pacts that you make are deepened by the richness and the severity of what's being covered.
Right. And you brought up Call of Cthulhu, and it reminded me, I wanted to talk about this with you, is that, so Call of Cthulhu, it's a very different horror game than World of Darkness. So where are you at? Are you enjoying it? Are you enjoying, and it's also probably good that you've got the counterbalance of your own fantasy game, right?
I'm in a very interesting spot. And like the nice thing about Cthulhu is that I'm not going to run it every time. The whole concept is like having different keepers and different investigators come in and play the game and really experience. Dylan's actually going to be our next one for February. So it's going to be a lot of fun, but I'm the mechanical base of Vampire is like one that I've not played before. I think it's akin to Fate where role play is king. And like your choices influence more than the dice do in some degree, right? Like
Sure.
Obviously, you make your rouse checks and you make sure you're good for the night. Or, you know, if you're pushed and that is something that affects your clan bane, like you'll have to, you know, make that associated roll. But there have been sessions of Darkness Over New Orleans where I don't roll a dice.
Right.
I don't roll anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just the conversations and it's just the role play and it's just the interpersonal relationships. And I think upon reflection, like that's also something that makes you feel so ingrained and so in it. And maybe that degree of separation is a little harder because you're not rolling dice. Maybe you forget you're in a game sometimes. And even if that's subconscious, but like, you know, but I am enjoying the experience a lot more than I thought I would. I think I was one of those fantasy players, like stereotypical D&D players that was really nervous about vampire. I see where it could be really touchy to cover some topics and like how do people, but that all depends on who you have at the table and who you trust to tell those stories with, right? And
right.
And thankfully I have been supremely lucky. This first game is what I imagine is the best experience I could have had.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Diving into Vampire the Masquerade and World of Darkness period. Like Dylan and Robin specifically, like they're so supremely talented and well immersed into this world. They are the best guides that Christian Thaddeus and I could have had. And you know, the more that I play, the more that I love the system and I love the challenge of getting to surmount it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. But absolutely.
It's funny because I talked about this with Robin a lot, but how it's exactly what you were saying about how Vampire is, you can play a whole game of World of Darkness a lot of times and not make a die roll. It's very easy to do. And I think that's why it translates so easily into live action gaming. I've been in live action games where you never really had a contest because you just figured it out. You just talked it out and it just made sense by the time any conflict might arise, it was already, it already made sense how it was going to go. So you didn't really, it almost felt like unnecessary to throw chops, it's rock, paper, scissors in most of the live action games. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it just seemed like, vulgar to like, why would you do that? Like, why would you impede this awesome back and forth we're having by throwing rock, paper, scissors with me? But it's something I think that, I know as a GM, I look for that in any game I play to like the less dice anybody is rolling, I feel the better the table is going. Is doing.
I can definitely see how that one And I suppose that is very specific to World of Darkness too. Like there's the comfort in just being able to tell the story, where in something like a Pathfinder or a D&D or a Witcher TTRPG, like those mechanics are so integral to the story you're telling. Like it does become harder and harder to separate those things.
Yeah.
But I agree to that statement that, you know, especially in something like World of Darkness, like just being able to riff and just being able to go is so beneficial.
Right. Yeah. So, with your GMing experience, have you had any trouble moments, any moments where the table, you started to see things start to wobble, or you had a player get really upset, or you had some sort of issue, and how, like, can you talk about how it resolved or what you did, or how it either didn't go well or it did go well, you're comfortable talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can definitely think of a few things, and I think that's the beautiful thing about running games is that you are the facilitator of communication. And like, if that communication cannot come to you, then the table will fail every time. Mm-hmm. So I think that I've absolutely had players come to me with things where it's like, they have been unhappy with a moment, or they felt as if not that a boundary had been crossed, but like we were approaching a point where like a line or a veil or, you know, something on the consent checklist was concerning them and, yeah, you know, things of that nature. And, you know, they were confused about something, but it's always been a conversation.
Okay.
So what is the issue? What can I do? How can we move forward? How do we, you know, how do we rectify it? And I think it's just the biggest way that I've come to solve problems is to have the conversation. And if the conversation doesn't go anywhere productive, then I really question if there's a space at my table for you. Mm-hmm. And I've only had to have one player leave my tabletop. And I think that has been the biggest struggle that I've had. And cause it was a live stream game.
Okay.
So there's not only the game happening.
Right.
And, you know, and I wish this person all the best. Truly comes to the issue of not fitting at the table, and that's fine. And that happens. Yeah. And that's not a character flaw.
Yeah.
But just having the conversations with the group and being like, hey, is this kind of where we're leaning? And then the sort of timid yeses, and then, mm-hmm. okay, well, this is my responsibility to initiate and execute that conversation.
Yeah.
And then to have the added element of having to make an announcement to people and to kind of be like, hey, so this is happening. Please don't ask any questions about it, because that always goes super well on the internet.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Hey, you know, sensitive things are happening. Don't talk about it, please. Please? It's just kind of like, oh, actually, we're going to talk about it.
Right.
Yeah, that's fine.
You know, and And you bring up another good point too that I wanted to cover was the differences between, and you touched on a perfect one right there, the differences between a, hey, let's get together and eat pizza and play D&D around my kitchen table and let's all make a solid time to play in front of the world in a medium that will be recorded possibly for, well, maybe not forever, but until the next technological breakthrough comes along, right?
Like
it's going to be, or it could be around a while. So, and realizing that, It's not a full jump into performance, but it is.
It is. It absolutely is, I think. Yeah.
And how it sounds like that's probably the hardest challenge you've had to deal with as far as streaming, but can you talk about some of the others? Is it, and this is for people, somebody that might be listening and considering it, like what are some of the, I wouldn't say hazards or pitfalls, but what are some of the roots sticking out on the path that someone might want to look out for?
I think that before anybody can humor the idea of streaming the game, there needs to be an understanding of the responsibility of the world that you've created and the world that you're wanting to create. I think that I've, to me, that comes a few fold, right? Mm-hmm. Are there problematic aspects to what I've created? Is it Eurocentric? Are there racist undertones that are not intended, but learned through my whiteness, my privilege that I am unable to kind of separate?
Right.
Do I reach consultation for that? You know, absolutely you should. This is me saying you should do that. There's a responsibility to pick people that will support and care for not only you, the world you've created, but each other at the table. Respecting time, respecting boundaries, understanding that conversations will probably have to be had, because even if it's your favorite game in the world, things will come up and you will have to have those conversations. And there is always understanding that the performance is secondary. Life takes precedence.
Yes.
This is something that I tell like my players. They probably are throwing hands in the air because they're like, stop saying that. but life takes precedence. Like if you are having a life thing, if I'm having a life thing, or if we get to tech check and people are like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Great. We don't play.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that creating healthy boundaries with yourself, your players, the game and the space that you're inhabiting needs to happen before you start, you hit record or you hit go live. Right. And I think that all comes under the umbrella of responsibility and understanding what an undertaking that is. And And that's another thing I learned. I learned heavily from Josh, Mr. Shegadance, and Parker Bliss over at the Welcome Inn. Like, it was watching them start with two campaigns that were huge and incredibly impactful in the space. And for me as an individual, like, I came into those spaces as a fan, and being able to call those people some of my best friends, like, you then are able to see the inside and where things become that responsibility and where those things become supremely important.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I would say really take stock of what you want, who you want to bring with you. Mm-hmm. Is there equity? Is there, right. You know, are you seven white dudes at the table? Like, are you, you know, thinking outside of yourself, like, you have a responsibility to tell a story that is not good, but impactful. And that comes from who you bring, what you talk about, what you cover, and how you, you know, accessibility. Like, there's so many things to think about, you know, like accessibility tools. And like, this is something that was, you know, and I keep bringing up Button, but like, they're a huge partner in a lot of the things that I do. And they brought from a creator called Stella Luna, like, putting the content warnings and lines and veils before we start the game. There's screens that I have in our Known Realms Talesh overlay where it's like, okay, we'll sit there for 30 seconds so the audience can read what content could come up at any given point.
Right. Right.
These are our lines. This is what we'll never cover. Yeah. These are our veils. These might come up. And then the audience can make an educated decision for themselves, their mental health and their safety. Mm-hmm. If that is something they want to engage with. We have the open captions from Google Meets.
Yeah.
And like,
that's awesome.
There is a responsibility. And I think that is something that needs to be accounted for before you even humor the idea of like running a game online.
Yeah, that's fantastic advice. Holy cow. Like,
that's, sorry, I went on a tangent there.
No, good for you. Good for you. That's, I mean, I think anybody that's thinking about streaming, hit rewind on the podcast and listen to this all again. Listen to what he just said.
Well, and like, and these are things I've garnered over like 3 years and through the experience of a lot of different people, like the captions I learned from Twee, from Josh, and like the lines and veils were brought to me from Stella Luna by Button. And, you know, there's so many aspects that are collaborative and that is instrumental in success. You cannot do it alone. You should not do it alone. That responsibility and advocacy and collaboration is king. Yes, king. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Underscore, triple, underscore, put stars by it, highlighted in hot pink. That is the truth, is that you cannot do it by yourself. You have to collaborate. And if you try to do it by yourself, therein lies madness, and you're going to need to make some sand checks that you probably are not going to make.
Well, you're not going to like yourself after it.
No.
There are experiences I've had where like I have felt so dejected about the things I've done because I'm in my own echo chamber, right? It's just
well said,
me. Yeah. It's just me and what my bad headspace wants me to hear, right? Having objective second or third parties who care about you as an individual but are able to be objective and honest.
Right.
It's so important.
Yeah. Wow. Awesome. Fantastic. So if the Magic Game Fairy shows up and says, oh, what's your favorite game? And like, you can play any game you want. What is the game you're going to be like, I want to play that one? You're going to have to go to a deserted island. With a bunch of really good players. You don't have to worry about who you're running into, but
I know who I'm taking to an island with me. Absolutely.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. So you've got that in your head but you can only take one game.
Witcher RPG.
Okay.
It is a beautiful system.
Okay.
It is crunchy in the most delightful and exciting way.
Okay.
It's a D10 system, and they have such robust crafting mechanics, such robust alchemy mechanics. The spell, like the level up system, it's all these skill trees that you can like dip into and like exchange your abilities.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I also am just a huge fan of The Witcher. So like the lore of that world, the characters within it are just so deeply human and rich and dynamic that like getting to give players my take on it. I ran it was an online game, but it wasn't streamed, where it was just me and a couple friends, and we played Witcher, and it was so much fun.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's a system that I haven't played in a little bit, but it's one that I would love to run a streamed campaign with it. I would love to play it all the time. Obviously, it's a little less high magic than I'd enjoy, but sure. it's a little more mid-low fantasy, but it's a beautiful system. The crunchiness is great. I love the hit modifiers. If you hit somebody in the head, it's x3 damage. Like you roll and multiply it by 3. You know, it's like there's so much fun minutia to dig into and explore in that game. And
Awesome. I'm gonna have to check it out. I have not.
It's a lot of fun.
Not checked out. So
well, and it's by R. Talisman Games who
oh, sweet.
Cyberpunk. So absolutely. Yeah.
They're incredible. Oh my gosh,
they're incredible.
The combat system Friday night fights in I think the original Cyberpunk game is still my favorite gunplay system because it teaches you that when guns come out you better find cover and there's no cowboy antics in that system.
Oh my god. When I learned that the Witcher RPG was so brutally fair
right
and like because you, depending on the armor you have, like you have a rolling AC, and like it really depends on like where you're hit and what's going on.
Okay.
But the day that I found out the Witcher RPG was not Dungeons and Dragons was when it was Josh, the governor, playing an elven criminal called Riffin of Gesso. Who 1v1'd the boss that I had been building up for like 3 sessions. And I was like, oh no, you took him out in like 3 hits. What happened? You found his lair, snuck your way in there and beat the brakes off of this man. And now I have nothing else for you today. What do you want from me?
Time out. I need to rewrite.
But it makes you feel the importance of like, okay, human enemies are definitely not the norm, and you see the importance of what the monster mechanics are, and like the you know, and god, don't get me started on the status effects. You got bleed, you got burn, you got stun, you got there's so many cool, but they're like effects that keep going throughout combat, and like you take rolling damage, and I can talk about it all day. It's so fun.
That's awesome.
I absolutely highly recommend it.
So you made me think of another question. When you have something happen like what you were just talking about with the Witcher game, where all of a sudden like things are turned on its side, what are your go-tos for that? Like, do you call for a break? Do you just run with it? You just run with it.
I go. Yes! I think there are a lot of moments early on in my career as a storyteller where I was horrified of things not going according to plan, which is natural, right? You think like. Right. But that's the freedom with understanding that you are not the story as a DM.
Oh, that's beautiful.
The story comes from all of you holding hands and moving forward together. I don't call myself the DM of Known Realms Talesh. I call myself the Archivist. And I just like to help turn the page of the adventure that's being told.
Yeah.
And so when things go awry, and there's one session in particular of Known Realms that we had where the intents of an NPC were misread. So this NPC was going to attempt a coup at some point. The party had thought that he was going to assassinate his sister. So the session turned into everybody running around the city trying to find this guy. But that's when my comfort in character becomes the forefront of the game. Like understanding what my players want to accomplish and then understanding what my NPCs are doing at any given time. Right. Like, okay, what are they doing with a free day? What are they doing in this moment? Like, and then just being able to build around the things you don't expect. That's what keeps your worlds organic and real and fresh, is being like, I know the people that occupy it. Yes, so
right.
Then we can kind of navigate these situations that are a bit uncharted and unexpected for any given session. Yeah.
Right. Oh my gosh. I love the idea of what you said about you are not the story and that you just help turn the page. I think that's, and I think a lot of new GMs can get hung up on,
you control the narrative. Yeah.
I'm the story. Oh my gosh. I have to keep this machine running. I have to keep this rolling. And if there's a hiccup, it's all on me. It's my fault. And
And I receive a lot of, and I think that this is another thing when like you're streaming games or like recording games that are publicly consumed, is like, you'll get the word genius thrown at you sometimes. They're like, oh, the way that you tell the story. And I'm like, people see it, and I can understand completely how it can be received as like self-flagellation or self-deprecation, but I'm like, no. This is a group thing. My players put in just as much work in a different way than I do.
Exactly.
You know, yes, and it's like, I am never one to take the credit for the way that a session goes, period. Right. Like that does not feel like something I am deserved. Like that doesn't, it doesn't feel earned. It doesn't feel deserved. Like we did it together. It's a collaborative thing.
And I totally understand that. Yeah.
I just want to be like, thank you. I definitely played my part, but that's all I did. You know?
Right. Yeah. I'll take the kudos for my part, but there were four other people here that were making the magic happen.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep.
That's awesome. Yeah. Okay. I think we are just about out of time. Alec,
thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah, I had a blast. Thank you so much. I am going to be checking out World of Aosha. It sounds right up my alley, so I need to get some time. I will be. When do you stream again?
Yeah, so Known Realms Talesh goes live at 6 p.m. Eastern every Sunday.
Okay.
So yeah, next week we have a Q&A with the cast and myself. So no normal session, but every Sunday.
Sweet. And then you are on Thursday nights with Darkness Over New Orleans.
Darkness Over New Orleans, an incredible Vampire the Masquerade campaign that I love very, very much.
Yeah. Good stuff. And anything else you're doing or you want to talk about?
I got some projects in the works, but
can you talk about
it? I'm gonna a revamp of an old podcast with a very good friend.
Nice. Very good. Okay. Yes. Well, hopefully we can hear more about that another time.
Definitely.
Okay. Alec, thank you so much. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. This was wonderful. Yeah,
I'd love to have you on again.
And absolutely.
We've got a lot more to talk about, I think.
Yes, I agree.
Awesome. Okay. All right. I will talk to you on the next one. And that was our interview with Alec. Big thank you to Alec for coming out, taking the time to be on the show, going through the interview, being so open and communicative about the things we talked about, sharing that information that he did, and just on all, just having a great conversation. I hope to have Alec back on the show again so we can pick his brain some more and talk tabletop role-playing games. So again, Alec, thank you so much. This interview series of the cast of Darkness Over New Orleans, we are going to continue that with number 3 and 4. And so that's part of the announcement that I was saving for the outro and a little bit of backstory. I had originally scheduled it so that the podcast, these episodes, would come out on the same day that we had our Twitch stream on Wednesday nights. I thought that was a good idea, you know, really double up on the energy. However, I didn't think about this really well. So I have the podcast that I try to get out in the morning or sometimes the night before and get it scheduled. And then I work my normal Wednesday shift at my job. And then I have my Twitch game Wednesday night. And when you do both of those on the same night, it gets a little intense. We'll just leave it at that. So what I want to do is I want to shift the schedule of the podcast releases so that we have 1 week Twitch game, 1 week podcast episode, 1 week Twitch game, right? It'll smooth things out a little bit for me on the production schedule. And also I can talk about the Twitch game, and it gives people time to schedule and be ready to the next week come to the show. So that's the plan. In order to do that, that means next week you guys get an episode instead of having to wait a week. And then we'll wait a week and go back to our normal bi-weekly schedule. So next week we will have part three of that interview, and then we'll wait a week, and then we'll do part four, and that's it. So cool. Again, our Twitch stream is happening this evening. Please come check it out, or you can check it out on our YouTube channel as well. I try and get all of the shows on there so you can watch it at a later time if you want. We will be doing episode one, and then we are kicking it off. This is a playtest come to fruition, where we will be playing our own hack, our own version of a Powered by the Apocalypse fantasy version set in the world of Drachenfell, which we came up with in season two, Dr. Hip and I did. So it's a lot of fun. It's a great cast. I have a full table, and I think you are going to enjoy it. So other announcements, other things, if you want to be a patron on the show, speaking of which, hey, holy cow, big, huge thank yous to Crippled Ninja, Patrick Kelly, and Scott Hippensteel for being Dragon Guard level members on the Patreon for the show. If you want to support the show, please check out the Patreon. The link is down in the show notes. There's going to be some episodes of our playtest that we did in trying to figure out the hack, and with our characters that are now have moved on to the Twitch stream. So those are going to be coming on to Patreon. We try and do little special things here and there. Our patrons are great. And if you want to support the show, it's a great way to do that. You can get in at a very low level if you want, but you can also join, sort of a mid-range level and get access to all the cool extra podcast stuff that'll be coming out soon. So check that out if you can. If you'd like to be on the show, please contact me. Probably best to contact me through the Gmail account, naturalgeekery@gmail.com. You can contact me through Twitter or Instagram, but lately I've been incredibly busy and I have not been on my social media much. So the Gmail is a surefire way to get a hold of me. You can also reach me on our Discord. So check out the Discord link. That's also down in the show notes. We have a nice small community of folks that are hanging out and talking about the show, talking about games, talking about the pets, talking about their crafts that they're doing. Just, it's kind of cool. And I hope it grows, because I think it's really cool to have a community of like-minded folks. So yeah, check that out if you can. Wow. We are over time. Look at us go. I now need to finish up the prep for the Twitch game and try to get some sleep. So I hope all of you are well. Please remember, you are needed out there. I know the world can be really rough right now. It can be really stressful, but you're needed. Hang in there and keep shining, everybody. I will see you on the next one. I will see you next week. Actually, I'll see you on the Twitch game if you show up. That's fine. Regardless, I'll see you next week on the next episode. And be well. Keep shining, everybody.